This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey, friends, welcome to the podcast. I don't want to be that mom that's braggy about her parenting. I mean, nobody needs that, but I've got a couple things I feel like I should brag about. And so y'all just stand by for a minute. Here's the first one. You ready? I made it to meet the teacher. And that's not a big deal to some of you guys, okay? You're like, if you haven't been around here long and you don't know kind of the history, you're like, okay, yeah, most people do. Most people do, that's correct, but we didn't. Missed it a couple years ago, missed it. Because meet the teacher at our school is from 7:40 to 8:40. Are you hearing me? 7:40 to 8:40. And I'm around college kids and high school kids all the time. And so if you're going to gather at 7:40, it's p.m. No, it's not in the little elementary school world. It's 7:40 a.m. is meet the teacher. Totally missed it altogether. Horrifying. So this year, not only did we get there, we were the first ones there. I mean, 7:36, we were waiting to get in and they let us in the building and we walked in and everyone's like, hey, JB, all the staff is so happy to see him. And the fact they all, every single one of them knows him by name is maybe slightly disconcerting, but they were like, JB, yay, you're back. You look so much taller, all the things. And we went in and we met that teacher. Well, actually I met a sub because his teacher is on maternity leave, but we met that teacher and we picked the locker and we did all the things. And yes, we are winning third grade. Let me tell you something else. If I'm going to brag, let me share one other thing about that. Ready? I already bought his school supplies. And again, you might be like, okay, well, we all buy school supplies. No, we don't all buy school supplies because last year, maybe the year before, I can't remember, I forgot to order them from the PTA. You know, you pay for them if you don't want to like go to Walmart and pick out every number two pencil. You just pay the fee and they deliver them and have them in his desk waiting with labels on it. I forgot. So the first day of school, we walk him in his little class, Mike and I do. Yes, we do. And in fact, Kate and Brett were with us and they had a little assignment sheet on their little desk and they were supposed to pull out their colors and like do a seek and find or something. And he had no colors to pull out because I then realized I didn't order school supplies. The only mom that missed that one. And so there we were and we were all horrified. My older ones are so judgmental. They're like, oh my gosh, how could you forget? Enough. Silence, everyone. And we were like, JB, borrow one from a friend. I don't know. It was like the most third child move ever. And so I already ordered school supplies. And so he has them for this year. Are you ready for that? He hasn't even started school yet. And that's handled. I'm so proud of me. I mean, him too, but me. And then one other little sweet note about that. Brett worked for a company this summer and they do those school supplies for a lot of the schools in Dallas. And so Brett all summer would work and they would gather all the supplies, put them in boxes and then go deliver them to the schools. And so that's probably why I remembered because Brett was involved in it every day. But Brett got to deliver the supplies to JB's school. And when he delivered the third grade supplies to their hall, he prayed over all of them and prayed for JB's grade and JB's class and for JB and his little supplies that he would have a good year. Can you even stand that? So precious. So anyway, I wanted to let you know that we are winning third grade. What we're not winning is dropping a kid off at college. I don't care that I've already done it once. This is a whole nother ball game. And we are leaving late this week. If you're listening to this podcast on the day it releases, which is Wednesday, I need you to know you need to stop right now and pause this podcast and say a prayer for me because I am ridiculous. Poor Brett. Every time we have any conversation or any photo shows up on my phone or anyone mentions like a trip we took when he was 10, oh, I cry. It's ridiculous. I thought I was going to do better this kid. I'm not. And so I need us to be praying for that. We're going to be taking him at the end of the week and dropping him off. It's time to pull the Band-Aid off. But I'm not winning on taking a freshman to college. And then Kate will be here a little bit longer before she goes back to Austin. So that's what's going on in the Ganoff house. Now, without any further ado, Tony Collier is here today. And Tony is so much fun. A friend and has a new book out called Don't Try This Alone. And has she been through a lot the last couple of years? As she kind of says in the beginning of this podcast, like, I'm a different person than last time I was on your show. And she's going to talk a lot about walking through life when the bottom falls out and how important it is to have community around you and just how the Lord works in that. And so it's really, really an amazing conversation. Tony admittedly cried through the last half of it. It was really sweet and precious and hard and all of it. So it's vulnerable and real. And this is just it's a good conversation for if you're going through something really hard, or if you're not, and it may be coming down the pike. It looks different for all of us what that hard is, but this is a good way to frame that and be ready. And her book's excellent. Highly recommend you grab a copy of Don't Try This Alone. So here we go with Tony Collier. Tony Collier, welcome to Mesmerized.
We're back. We're back like we never left, okay? And I'm excited about it.
I'm excited about that. I don't know how many times you've been on this show, or have you been on Sidetracked with me and Heather McFadden?
Yes.
We've done lots of fun stuff, but I'm so excited that you're here because we could talk about your new book, Don't Try This Alone. And girl, you've lived some life in the last 2 years.
Child, I'm different. You hear me?
Yeah.
Literally from when we last spoke, I am a different human being, but I don't smell like ashes. And that matters.
And that's the key. And
let's go.
The key.
Let's go.
Do you know what I was thinking about? Well, let's start here. I was thinking about as we're taping this,
yeah.
All over the news has been the Coldplay story. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, I don't know how you wouldn't know what I'm talking about.
You want to talk about a trigger. That's it. That's it right
okay.
there.
I thought about you this morning because, yeah. I mean, I read a meme or something, and y'all know what we're talking about, this listeners. We're talking about the man who was caught having an affair at a Coldplay concert. They had a camera, all that.
The kiss cam got him.
The kiss cam got him for sure. And I mean, I saw the memes like we all saw, and one of them was like, thanks for uniting the country. We've all agreed on something for one day or something like that. And,
yeah.
And I was thinking about this and how people love to jump in on, I don't even know if it's sensationalistic, Tony, if it's just like misery loves company. I don't know what this whole thing was, but I thought about you and I thought this is probably really hard to watch this go down. But then I also thought you just wrote a book speaking into walking a really hard road, similar and very different yet similar.
Yep.
What would you say to that wife who's walking that right now? And as we speak is probably hidden out somewhere. What would you say to her?
That is such an intimate question. Okay, so just
too intimate. If it's too intimate, don't.
What are you even talking about? On my podcast, literally our like phrase, our catch line is go deep or go home. So I'm not, there's no different here. No difference
here.
Okay. But you know, just to give a little context, in September of 2023, I got a call from my now ex-husband that he was being extorted. He had cheated and there was a video and all sorts of things, and they were going to out him and come to our church and all these things. And he had given him all this money. And unfortunately for him, he had to confess it to me because they were getting ready to send me all the proof and everything. And this wasn't the first time in our marriage that infidelity was present, years and years and years of it. And so I actually posted a thread the other day, and I was like, for those of us that have been cheated on and have endured betrayal and infidelity again and again and again, especially that clip of the CEO at the Coldplay concert, like it's more triggering than it is trendy. And I think it's because I know the stories. I've gotten DMs and emails and texts and strangers, people that I know, other pastors' wives, of this, really this sickness that's going on, this pandemic of not being able to be faithful, breaking the covenant again and again, betrayal. And so genuinely, I have been thinking about the wife. And if I had an opportunity to speak with her, I think I would say, be as sad as you need to be, because that's what I needed to hear. Grieve. Like, especially when you have children, you feel like you shouldn't grieve. You should be strong for them. You should be be sad with them and for them and for what has happened to your family. Do not allow anyone to rob you of your ability to grieve really, really well. And the second thing that I would say that sounds so cliche and I almost kind of hate it. This is not the end of your life. I needed to hear that, because when it's all happening and your reality is quite literally being burned to the ground, your schedule, your home dynamic, everything, who you talk to every day, who you wake up and kiss, everything is literally changing. And it feels like it's ending, but it's really just changing. And so it's not the end of your life. Truly, it is a traumatic change that's happening. And there really, genuinely, I promise you, is freedom and peace on the other side.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, as I look at this book you're writing, and we talked a little bit before you started recording that a lot of times as authors, we write from a place of authority, or we've walked through something and we're on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And you've written a book in the midst of it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help thinking about, God willing, not everybody has to walk through a public divorce or infidelity, but you guys, we've all walked through a prodigal kid, a debt that kept growing, a church hurt, a failed business venture, some public failure. And maybe it isn't as public as we feel like it is, but I feel like maybe it's even harder when it's not a public failure because we feel like we're walking around as a fraud. And you're speaking into this, like for everybody, for all the places that are hard and messy and gross, and it feels like the end, you're speaking into this. And so thank you for writing in the midst of the hard.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this for a moment. You really hone in on community and the importance of community. Talk to us a little bit about that and how that looked in your life.
Well, at the end of the day, it's weird to me that we haven't all figured out that we were designed to be with each other, not in a romantic way, but in a way that completes God's design for us. And we use excuses, valid excuses, like I'm an introvert, I'm very nervous, I have social anxiety, I've been hurt before, I don't want to trust again, I've been betrayed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, we acknowledge and need people for every aspect of our life, but we don't acknowledge it in friendship. So if our tire goes flat and we don't know what we're doing, okay, we're going to ask our next door neighbor, Mike, to help us, okay? Or we're calling the AAA people. If we cannot see and read so that we can't learn and have a job, we're going to go to the optometrist, I think that's what they're called, to get a prescription. Okay. And glasses and contacts. We are doing that for our physical bodies. If we want to get fit in the gym, we're like, let me go ahead and get a trainer before I hurt myself out here. We are so okay with needing people for very tangible and practical things. But when it is for community, friendship, and connection, we have all the excuses. And the truth is, if we were not designed to do life alone, then especially when we're in pain and trauma, we definitely are not equipped to handle it all alone. And so this book is about that. And the truth is, I'm an achiever. I'm a recovering people pleaser. I love to work. Not like, I love it. I'm strong. I am capable. I'm extremely smart. I've got all the gifts and talents. I do not like to admit when I want help, when I need help. But the truth is, over these past 2 years, I had no choice. If I was going to be integral, I needed accountability and I needed my people to do that for me. If I was going to show up well in the public and be honest about what was going on, I need mentors to guide me along the way. If I was going to feed my children, I needed people that could watch them for 2 hours so that I can get myself together to even be presentable in front of them. I needed people in this season, and honestly, it proved to me that this is something I needed to tell the world. So I wrote about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we are meant to be sisters because same way, super, super high achieving and to a flaw, like it's annoying.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm like priding myself on not getting sleep. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 I'm over it. I really can't take another day of me, but yet I keep going. And so, and people put up with it. I don't know. People still show up.
I'm joking.
But, as you're talking through this, I'm thinking about, when you go to rely on community, people aren't well-versed in showing up. And that's the crux of it, right?
Yes.
Like you're like, okay, I'm going to get out there. I have the gumption to reach out there. Yet at the same time, people aren't, their responses can be hard. In your situation, you're dealing with, your ex as a pastor, y'all kind of pastored together.
Yep.
And so you're looking at a whole range of people responding in a whole range of ways, many of which are not healthy. So most of which probably has. So how do you work through that? The fact that I want to be vulnerable, but I don't know what's coming towards me.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll say two things to this. I want to affirm that people do say crazy stuff, especially when you're a public figure. I'll never forget a DM I got after I posted a statement. I had a whole board of people helping me, Lisa Whittle, Lisa Turkhurst, Joe Saxton, Mark DeMoss, an incredible like legend in the PR space, was Billy Graham's PR. Like I really wanted to get this right and I wanted to do this well and honor my kids in the process and not give all like the nasty details
of
what was actually happening. And so I remember posting that statement and I got a woman that DM'd me and said, well, what did you think? What did you expect? Of course your husband's going to cheat on you. You had nannies living with you.
Okay. Well, that found that helpful. Thank
so
you for that.
Okay. With that said, when you're going through trauma and pain of any kind, what helps you to balance those negative comments is that you have the voices of healthy people in your life in the reserve. Cindy, I had a group of women, six other women that I have been walking with in what we call a confessional community for, at that time, almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. I had built up the reserve of my people because 4 years ago, I wanted to be intentional about this. I did not want to be caught slipping as the enemy of our souls attacks me and my children and my family. And so I've been intentional about community. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how bad I would need them in the next 2 or 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for anyone out there listening, and you, maybe you're not going through something hard right now, now is the time, okay? Yeah. Now is the time to build the army. Now is to have the team B in the reserves when team A needs to tap out. Now is the time to have intentional conversations with your friends that say, hey, I know we're at this space right now, very cordial, very, you know, we're kind of like friends, but not like deep intentional friends. Like, I'd love to go deeper with you. I'd love to share some of my story with you. I'd love to hear some of your story. If you're open to that, let's schedule some time to have some deep conversations. Like, now is the time to do that so that when tragedy does hit, you have people in the reserve.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart. When I will never forget when we were doing foster care, someone that I really looked up to, very strong Christian leader in my life. And it was one of the hardest times because we were pretty sure the little boy that we had, we've now adopted. We were pretty sure he was leaving. And so I went, remember going, and I had tears in my eyes. And this particular person said, well, you knew what you were getting into with foster care. And I was like, wow. And all I said back was, just because I knew what I was doing didn't make it easier. It doesn't make it easier in the moment. And that's the thing, is these people, myself included, like, we're probably someone's hurt. Who knows what we've said off the cuff?
Yes. I just had a conversation yesterday with someone who said, hey, when you said this to me, I felt reprimanded. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like,
yes.
And we so lean in.
We give space and grace for that too. What's it like when someone's walking through this really hard? What's a good response? Like, what was helpful to you? I don't mean your inner sanctum necessarily. Let's talk about that next layer. What's a good response?
Yeah. I talk about this in the book because one time I told a friend that I was having some really hard challenges with my daughter and her behavior in school. And we've since done virtual school now because it's better than in person for her. And she was like, good thing you have a son. We can get it right on the next go round. I said,
yowza.
And I think what we actually need to hear is, man, that does really suck. Mm-hmm. See, in our confessional community, we have learned the art of withness. And I talk about this a lot in this new book. And it's just this idea of being present with someone in their pain and explaining how that pain also impacts you, because that makes them feel less alone. And I think what has happened is we all want to be the experts. We want to fix and solve, and we want to rescue people. And I mean, we're made in the image of God, but we are not Jesus. We are not saviors, but we want that. We want to be people's saviors. And so I think what happens is we move so quickly past the emotions that we're trying to get to the logical, practical, I want to get you out of the grief. But Cynthia, you know this. I mean, we've been reading the Bible. We saw the death of Lazarus. We saw that Jesus had intention to resuscitate him. And before he did it, he stopped and cried with Lazarus's sisters. Because I think even our God honors that when someone is in grief, maybe we don't rush to fixing it. Maybe instead we rest in the reality that we are people of grief and that we actually have to grieve.
Yeah. Yes, that's so good. You know, and everyone, please be clear. We're not talking about my book. We're talking about Tony's. But you said that, it made me think of something I wrote about in my book that hadn't come out yet. But when Dorcas died, all the widows, all the widows were around and were holding up the things that she had generously given, the clothes, all the things, showing evidences of her generosity. And I was thinking about that, and I wrote about it in the book, like, what's the evidence of our generosity in words? If we were to die and someone's pleading for a prophet or the Lord himself to raise us, like, what is the evidence of our generosity? Well, people come and say, like, this is the clothes she gave us. These are the kind words she spoke over me. This is the care she gave my kid. And I think about that a lot, that story of just, what is the evidence of our kindness? And I think we're so quickly to want to throw money at something, which is great. We should give generously. I think we're whatever it might be, but the kindness so often seems to start with our words, our responses, our guardedness in our words, you know?
So it's our presence.
Yeah.
It's actually our presence, and it is enough. Okay. And I think we want so badly, again, to relieve people of the pain that's happening in their life, that we just, we still the presence, the moment where it's like, I'm with you. I see you. I'm so sorry this is happening. When you said that, it really made me feel sad with you. I can understand that pain. Here's some moments in my life where I felt like that too. So I get it. And I'm just going to sit here with you. And in our counseling group, we have this phrase, when you're ready and not before. When you're ready and not before, we can talk about some options and we can talk about next steps. But I want you to be ready for that. Right now, I just want to honor the in-between space of the grief and the heavy. And so let's just sit here. And I can't tell you how many people, I called my best friend Aaron almost every week, probably for like 6 months after I found out that I needed to end my marriage. And I remember being at the USPS post office in my car, and I just called her and I just started crying. And she didn't even say anything. I literally am just remembering that moment. She didn't say, what can I do? I'm on the way. Where are you? She was like, I know. No.
Yeah, I know.
I could cry.
I could cry too. Should we cry or should we make a joke and move on? I don't know, Tony.
Well, I don't really know. I'm going to let if the tears come, I'm letting them suckers fall.
Okay? And I want you to know that I'm here. I'm practicing the presence of it, the withness. That's I'm learning it as we go.
Right now, look at you.
Look at me.
Over the internet, over the interwebs.
Yes. Okay. Witness. Let's talk shame for a minute. Darn, my favorite. The shame, right?
My favorite topic.
I'm a big fan of shame over here. In my own life, I tend to really promote it for some reason amongst myself. But yeah. I mean, living, and I'm joking, obviously, but that living in shame, whatever the thing is, you know, like we can have shame on big levels. We can have shame on small levels. We can have shame over what we ate or whether or not we exercise or what size our pants are or how our dog behaves when people come in or what our college our kid got in. I mean, shame is so pervasive. What do we do with that?
I literally say shame is an identity attacker. And you and I have both heard this phrase. I think even Heather says it too. Like, guilt says I've done something bad. Shame says I am bad. It is literally an identity attacker. Because at the end of the day, we are not perfect, right? So we've got to start with that foundation. Mm. Like, we will do and say things that are wrong and mean and bad. A curse word may slip out. Like, I stopped cursing when I was 25. And every now and again, I'd be like, you know, like, oh, calm down. Mm-hmm. I've recently decided not to drink anymore. I just don't have any self-control. I just can't. Okay. Because it's not working. So okay. I'm a mocktail mommy. I'm a part of the sober community. And I don't feel ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. I can accept guilt that maybe there's been a couple of nights where we had one too many wine glasses, but I'm not ashamed of that, because the truth is I've been hurting and I've been fighting to heal well. And every now and again, I'll get it wrong. I will drink a little too much wine and embarrass myself and not be the leader that I need to be. And from that place, my job is not to go into a tiny hole and hide. It's to say, where's my accountability? I want to be better than this, to voice who I actually want to be, and then to get back up again and keep going and believing that there's a God who has forgiven me for every wrong turn. And I just think, I mean, here's the other thing I will say. I have been ashamed. I don't think I have any more shame in me because all my business have been on the internets. Okay. You can Google it. But I've also seen shame tear my whole family apart. You know, as I've been on this forgiveness journey, because at first it was very difficult for me to forgive my ex-husband. I'm like, I'm running him over. It is what it is. And I really had to allow the Holy Spirit to do a work in me. As a matter of fact, you can't see it, but on the right side of me, if you're listening to this, is the book Forgiving What You Can't Forget. I'm actually restarting it because I need more of that. In my best days, I really am sorrowful for my ex-husband because of the shame. He's too ashamed to just tell the truth that he's had a sexual addiction for years, that he has allowed sexual addiction to drive his decisions and to break our covenant again and again and again, that he should not be pastoring and still is because he didn't put an accurate or great board in place to hold him accountable, but he's too ashamed. Mm-hmm. And there's something there that's driving him away from real freedom. Mm-hmm. And it's shame. It has a name. And the best thing that we can do to defeat shame is to recognize that we have a savior who's not the author of it.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. Friends, I am so excited to introduce you to a company that you may not know about. And if you don't, it's time you do, Mr. Penn. All right. I'm talking specifically about Bible journaling supplies, and they have the best on the market. They have everything from journaling kits to journaling Bibles to no-bleed Bible pens and highlighters. And let me tell you something. That's critical, right? If you want to write in your Bible, that's what I love about it. If I want to write in my Bible, take notes, journal, like they have all the things you need in order to write on those thin pages and not have it bleed through. I think that's my favorite thing. But you know what else I love? I love that it was started by a Christian teacher in Louisiana, and they have 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Are you kidding me? 100,000. And so they offer custom products for churches, schools, conferences, and you get your money back if you don't like any of the products. And so you guys, seriously, shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market. And remember, they're fantastic gifts for your friends, all the ladies in our lives at MrPen.com. That's where you shop at MrPen.com. That's MrPen.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Yes, we do. Use the code MESMERIZE10. Again, MESMERIZE10, two S's in MESMERIZE, at checkout to get a 10% discount on your entire order. I want to go back for a second on the fact that you decided you were going to stop drinking. And I think if you listen to this podcast, you know, I'm not a drinker and I don't have any problem with anyone who does drink, but I just have never been a drinker because there's so much alcoholism in my family that I just felt like I drink enough Diet Coke for a whole nation. Okay. Tony Carter, like I have a problem. So if you turn that into something with alcohol, look out, people.
I have a different personality. I can go down the hill, but anything. The next thing you know, I'm on meth. I can't do nothing. It's just, I'm going, you know what I'm saying?
It goes literally from working out too much to meth. You don't know where we're going to go, Tony and I. Yeah. But I love that you have power over that. Like you can just say like, I'm going to stop. I'm just not going to drink because I know my personality. And I think there's something, that's not really what we're talking about in this thing, but I think that's a word for somebody because I feel it's so easy to feel the shame and to feel like nothing I can do. It's just who I am. I'm a workaholic. Yep. I don't know, whatever it's an eating thing. It's a workout thing, a workaholic thing. I mean, you can think of 1,000 things that it can be. And I love that you found freedom in stepping out of that. And you knew you had the power to do that. And it reminds me of just the gospel of how people want to point the gospel as so limiting and that it's all these rules. And Jesus is saying, I'm offering you freedom from the things that don't bring abundant life. And so I would just wonder what your word would be to someone who just feels like they're fighting something over and over and over. Yep. I mean, what did it take? Did the Holy Spirit lay it on you? What did it take to say, I'm just not going to drink anymore. I can't do it well.
Don't you worry. I'm going to tie this conversation, this part of the conversation back into our conversation about
God. Bring it in, Tony.
Okay? Because it wasn't just me. I remember when I initially started walking through the divorce. It was terrible. I was so sick. I mean, I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I was throwing up. I mean, it was just, I lost 20 pounds in 2 weeks. I looked like a little crackhead. I mean, it was not good at all. And at first I wasn't drinking. And then because I wasn't sleeping, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna have a little wine, right? Oh, someone got me a housewarming gift. So we moved my kids to a new house. Someone got me a little wine. I was like, oh, I love it. Did a little wine. Slept a little better that night, if we're going to be honest. Okay. Next night, I'm going to have 2 glasses. Let me just see how long we can actually sleep and keep this party up. Next thing you know, I'm ordering bottles of wine with every grocery order. And now I got, you know, a bottle or a glass of wine in my hand every single night. And in my praying in the mornings during my quiet time, I started feeling conviction. Right. So at first it was kind of chill and then it kind of started growing and I felt that conviction. And I literally wrote in my journal, like, Lord, if this is something that you're calling me away from, tell me. The next day I get a text message from my friend, Deborah Folletta. And she says, I know we don't know each other very well. And I'm almost hesitant to say this. I literally have the text still, but I just wanted to reach out. I even made a post about it, actually. I wanted to reach out.
I saw it,
That the Holy Spirit has led me to tell you to be careful with alcohol.
Wow.
And I just confessed everything. I'm like, Deborah, literally, I wish I had my journal with me to show you that I've literally been processing this. I felt like it was the Lord. I asked him for clarity, and that clarity came through you. And this, my friends is why you don't do life alone, why you leave your heart and your mind and your whole life open so that people have the opportunity to come and help you be better. Okay? Be better. And she would text me and she would, hey, how's it going? And I was very honest. I was like, because that's also what happens when you have friends that don't leave the room, right? Because because shame festers when someone shames you for what you've said or done. But my friend Deborah, when she checked in, I literally told her like, hey, I actually had like a drink the other night because it was a Galentine's. And I was like, oh, let me get a little drink. But then I felt nauseous. I was like, Lord, the Lord must really not want me to drink. And she's like, that's okay. I want you to start asking questions like, why am I choosing to drink? Is it because I want to be social and I want to fit in? Is it because I want to knock the edge off of some sadness? She walked with me. And what's crazy is that I started drinking again a year later and was like, okay, I feel like I'm healthy enough to start again and to do it with boundaries. And I wasn't. And then I had to be honest with myself and say, Tony, you don't have self-control in this area. You will not make good decisions doing this. Stop. Just cut it completely out. Cut it off. What the Bible say? If my hand sin, we're just cutting it off. Okay?
Cut it off.
Whole hand off.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's just a strong word for whatever your thing is. And I think even about like groups I've been in where it is not, it's, like gossip has been a thing. Like I've known, I've had like, I can't go on that girls trip anymore.
Yep.
Because I'm going to jump in on whatever it is, whoever they're bagging on.
I can make fun. Yeah. I can make fun of somebody very well.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And so, you know, like just different place in my life where I felt like I've needed to back out of that and having that community around you. And I love that it's someone you weren't even that close to that the Lord was using to reaffirm, which is also word for like, listen, when you're chasing after the Lord and he gives you these nudgings or, you know, to say something to someone, doesn't have to always be, like hers was not in the form of condemnation, but it doesn't always have to be a, hey, watch that. Maybe it's just a, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Or, hey, you know, can I do a book of the Bible with you? You know, if the Lord's pushing you towards someone like, Be receptive to that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about, I have a couple more things I want to ask you about. One, will you just real quick, you've mentioned confessional community. Yeah. Talk to us about what that means to you and how do you set one up?
I had to do a whole chapter on it in the book because I knew people would be like, what are you even talking about? And I don't want to confess to anybody. Long story short, Dr. Kurt Thompson has been actually doing confessional communities for years. And he's been putting strangers together in rooms to practice witness with each other. Well, my friend Jessica Honegger reached out 4 years ago now and was like, hey, I want to start one of these things. Dr. Kurt was her psychiatrist and she was like, let's do it. So she started calling all of us, all of her friends. Would you want to do this? Would you want to do this? This is what it's going to look like. We're going to meet every single month for 3 hours. We're going to have an annual retreat. And I just was like, yes, I want that. Within the confessional community, essentially what we do, especially on those 3-hour calls, is we ask the question or questions, what are you grieving and what are you longing for? And we just kind of start with that, right? Mm-hmm. And then we confess things. What have we done wrong? Some of us have gone off on our kids a little bit too harshly, spoke to our husband in the wrong way, road rage, let some curse words slip out, a few too many drinks were had, hello somebody. We confess those things to each other in this safe environment. Not because the Zoom call is safe, because we didn't all been on the COVID Zoom calls and somebody didn't popped on that wasn't supposed to be, but because the people are safe. And it's beautiful and anyone can start it. And I have like an 8-week course that I do with women. And I actually transition this course group, live course group, into a confessional community of their own. And I got to tell you, Cynthia, I have 2 groups that have transitioned into confessional communities and it is beautiful. We had an unexpected death in our last community group and their confessional community, many of them went to the funeral with a person they'd never met in person. They had just been on Zoom calls. And I just can't imagine when the daughter of the woman who passed away looked up and these women who were strangers but so near and dear to her mama showed up for her. I can't imagine the narrative that she now has that, oh, females actually can really be kind.
Yeah. I want to do one of those. That sounds incredible. I need to be signed up.
You would love to jump on that. It's beautiful. It truly is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you did something on social media that I screenshotted it and I was like, I'm going to remember this because you, when as this book was coming out, you basically said, I need help. And here's how you can help me
right now.
And, you're like, yeah, I don't, I can't let this book can't bomb. Basically, you said it better than that.
Yeah.
But this book can't bomb. I was disappointed in the results of an earlier book. I don't even know which one, because I think all your stuff is great, and I feel like everyone's read all your stuff, so I can't imagine. But, and you're like, here's specifically how you can help me, and you were like, you list out these things. You're like, have me on your podcast, invite me to a Zoom with your book club. Like, you went through all these things. It was awesome, because as a girl who's about to put out her second book, like, I'm already sweating over here because I have to ask for endorsements.
I procrastinate so hard on endorsements. I'm like, I don't want people to have to take their time.
Well, and I don't want them to say no, even though I know it's normal to say no, because then I don't want my feelings to be hurt. Although I know there's not a reason, because people are busy. It's not, but you know what I mean? Like, it's easier to not put yourself out there and ask, to just be like, you know what? I'm just going to assume we're all great friends, and then I won't think otherwise when people won't take time. And that's not what it's about in general. But what I loved about you doing that is you just put yourself out there and you're like, here's the things I need.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you to step up. And I thought, wow, like, that's something, like, immediately, I think the same day I got something from your publicist, I'm like, that I can do for you. I can have you on a podcast. I can talk about your book the day it released. I can, so I don't even know that I necessarily have a question, other than I would just say, could you encourage us, like, be verbal about what you need? I think that we want people to step in, but they don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that? Did someone say to you, like, hey, you should consider this? Or were you just like, I don't care, I got nothing to lose, I'm putting it out? Like, what did that look like?
Gosh. I hated every minute of it. Can we just be, let's just start there? Because I don't want anyone to think that this was just the easiest thing in the world. If I'm honest, after I posted it, some grief hit. Because it reminded me that I'm doing a lot by myself now. I'm not married. I'm a single mama. I got two kids. I'm managing 11 million schedules. I'm still on the road teaching, preaching. I've got a live-in nanny, which is the only way I can do my job. And she's, you know, a foreign exchange student. So I'm supporting her. I'm supporting my kids. Like, I was on the phone with my mom and dad last week. And I literally was crying, like, this is the hardest I've ever worked in my whole life. Like, just crying to my mama and daddy. And I don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I really cannot do this alone. Mm. And I am alone, you know, that's the reality. I have friends, obviously, but I'm alone in the things that I'm not supposed to be alone in. I wasn't supposed to get a divorce. My marriage was not supposed to end up not God honoring. I fought for it. I was supposed to have a husband that helped me raise my kids while putting out this book. Like, that's the reality. And in order to feel less alone, I have to do the brave thing and invite people in to help me. And there are moments, and I don't want to discredit this, where you actually don't have the words. Like, when I moved to my new house, I all of my savings were wiped out. I had to pay for a lawyer to protect me because my ex-husband wanted me to sign an NDA and then some sort of just a confidentiality agreement, all these things about what he'd done. And so I was just paying for this retainer. And I had some friends like, okay, so what are we doing about the furniture in your house? And I'm like, so upset because I can't afford to buy new furniture. And my counselor was like, well, would you rather a house that is lavished or a house that's loved? Let your people love you. And I walk around my house right now, Cynthia, like, my dresser was given to me by my confessional community. My bed was given to me by my friend Jen, who does in real estate, and she just had an extra bed. My side tables are from Deborah Folletta, and they're a reminder that I don't need wine to go to sleep at night, that instead of wine, I got my Bible on my end tables. I got, you know, the mirror was given to me by Lisa Whittle because she's like, I know you're going to want to look at yourself in the mirror and be all cute. Like, my daughter's bedroom is bought by Jackie Hill Perry. Like, we walk around and we see the fruit and the product of what it is like to just be brave enough to ask for help. And I just can't imagine if I wouldn't have asked. I can't imagine it. I would have let myself fail because of my pride. And I don't want my children to grow up with a mom who's too prideful to ask for help. Because that's what it is, pride. And we just got to defeat it, y'all. So
We do. And whether you need furniture or you need counseling or whatever it is to be able, that's the word, is ask for help. Yeah. And then be the help. Be the people that are willing to do that. Last thing, I was struck by something in your book, just talking about how God's using imperfect stories. And I remember on social media seeing you, you said something to the effect of, and I'm sure it's happened a lot, but you said that you were asked to not do a speaking engagement right after some things came down. Everything kind of came out in public about the divorce, and you had lost some speaking engagements. I don't know, at least one you referenced. And I remember a lot. I remember thinking through that and being like, wow, this is going to take some processing too, as you walk through this. But now you're seeing little by little how God is using imperfect stories. And I just wonder how you might encourage those of us who are walking it with, like you have in the past, kids that are difficult and emotional things that are hard with our kids or our marriages or our finances, whatever the things are. Like, how have you seen that God will use those stories? He's faithful.
Yeah. Man, I'm already crying.
Okay, I'm here for it. Me too.
I remember the day that I had to tell my daughter. She had already walked with me through my first divorce. And her dad was just abusive, very verbally abusive. And then it kind of started turning physical, and I ended up leaving. And now I think, even when I ask myself the question that, why did I stay so long with all the cheating? It's really, a lot of it was my daughter. I didn't want her to have to experience divorce again. And so we were sitting in our old house, and I pulled up two chairs by the back screen door, and I just told her, I said, I am divorcing Mr. Sam. He has not been honest about a lot of things. He's done some really hurtful things, and he is not very repentant. He's not sorry. And so our life is going to look different over the next couple of years. And we're going to move, which I just really didn't want to leave my house. I had like painted walls, you know, like really thought this is where we would grow older. And she leans over to me and she puts her hand on my shoulder and she said, it's okay, Mom, I'm here for you. Which no 9-year-old, right, should even have to be there for their mama like that, you know? And I was grateful for that. Well, we moved and our whole lives changed, and we have new community. We're at a new gym. Like, all of these things have changed. And a couple of months ago, we were driving into our neighborhood, and it's so pretty right now because everything's so green. And I was like, oh, I love our neighborhood in the summer. It's so cute. I'm so glad we're here. Like, we're so close to her best friend. I'm closer to her dad now. And he's gotten a lot of help and changed his whole life. And my daughter, Dylan, goes, Mom, I know these past couple of years have been a little hard. And then she whispers, but I kind of feel like our life is better. Mm-hmm. It's almost like she was afraid to say that it was better because she knew how painful it had been. Mm-hmm. And that's just redemption. That's redemption. Mm-hmm. When it's been so painful and you can see the purpose, you can see it, you can feel it, your kids can see it. God has rewritten our whole story, and it has been a refining. Things have burned to the ground. I have lost so much, so much. And I've seen the goodness of God in the land of the living. I've seen it through me, my career, my ministry, my children. And it's not worth it. The pain is not worth it. I want to say that. I want to affirm that in someone's heart story. And it will not be wasted. God won't let it. He has a plan for our pain, and he will not waste it on you. And that's,
yeah,
we've just witnessed it, you know?
Yeah.
We've witnessed it.
Well, I'm a firm believer.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that if you can't see it or feel it or believe it for yourself, borrow it from someone else.
Yeah.
I feel like in my life, I've done that a lot where I'm like, I feel like I can't trust God in this situation, but I'm going to go find someone in the Bible and I'm going to borrow their faith in a situation. Yeah. And I think a lot of us, Tony Collier, have borrowed your faith through this and just watched and observed and prayed and just begged the Lord to do mighty and merciful things for you. And to see it go from a point where we're like, okay, we're losing speaking opportunities. And that's not a pride thing. That's just a financial thing at some point. And not to mention the message the Lord's given you. Like it deserves God's word deserves to be heard. And so anyway, I just, y'all, Tony's so the real deal. And I want to ask you, listeners, to buy this book because I think it is necessary for all of us. But I think you know somebody who needs to read it. So buy yourself a copy, and then you're going to buy a copy for someone else. You're just going to throw it on their desk or whatever, and there won't have to be some awkward conversation. And the other thing is, I was thinking this is a great opportunity to do like a book club with a bunch of girls, like get people together. Don't you think, Tony?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Because there's so many good questions. And so I just think this is a great place. If you're trying to get community, if you are walking through hard, dig in. If you're not walking through hard yet, hey, it probably is coming. Sorry to say, we've all felt it. And so a great way to remind yourself to build community and use the book as a tool to do that. So listen, again, the book is called Don't Try This Alone, How to Build Deeper Community When You Want to Hide from Your Pain. And then you can find Tony everywhere. If you're not following her, you needed to be doing that. And then she has other books, Brave Enough to Be Broken and Broken Crayon Still Colors, a children's book. Is that right?
Yeah, it's so cute. We just hit 45,000 units sold. People love that kid's book.
It's a great book. Yeah. And then your podcast is called Broken Crayon Still Color, right?
It's called the Still Coloring Podcast. You see what we did
Pardon
there?
Me.
Still coloring, you know?
Still like, coloring.
Still coloring. Bada boom, bada bang.
And you might need to add a still to it after the last couple of years. You could say still coloring. Like we might need to put two stills because it feels like
that's actually, I may actually use that because we got a new season coming out. That's okay. Still.
I mean, still. I'm just saying, Tony Collier, you don't have to like reference that. Okay, well, thanks for being the real deal. Thanks for sharing your heart. Thanks for all that you do. We're big fans, praying over you, praying over this book that the Lord will use it in mighty ways. And thanks, friend.
Yay.
Thank you! All right, fun conversation with Tony. Appreciate her being so real and authentic with us. And check out her book, Don't Try This Alone. And then remember to be praying for me the next few days as I drop off Brett and his spatula. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you missed the podcast from last week and you need to go back and listen. Also, would you share this show with a friend, someone that would enjoy it, help us continue to grow the audience? If you haven't left a review, I would love for you to do that too. Thanks, you guys, so much for all that you do, for supporting this, and for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the best.